Yo, my dudes. We're talking about Casper today.
Casper, the friendliest ghost.
The friendliest ghost around? Is that how it goes?
Casper, the friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost you know. Though grown-ups might look at him with fright, the children all love him so.
Because I'm doing this movie, but I don't. Apologies once again for my obnoxious singing. You know, when I actually really try, I don't know, I think it could kind of sound decent, but I don't trust my own ear. One, I mishear everything all the time. No one liked playing the telephone game with me when I was a kid. It always got fucked up when it got to me, and then there'd always be the one girl or pack of mean girls or whoever who would call me out and say that I was doing it on purpose. And listen, there was probably some times where I was doing it on purpose because I thought I was being funny. But generally, if you caught me in a game of telephone, I was legitimately mishearing things. That's the whole purpose of the game anyway. If it's boring by the time it gets all the way around the circle, well, that was a boring game of telephone. So I guess we're hanging up now. Anyways, we're not here to talk about my auditory processing disorder or the game of telephone. Lad, we're here to talk about Casper. Casper, the 1995 film. However, we're going to get into some info on the backstory of Casper the Friendly Ghost and how he came to be. So first off, this movie, I can't say it was one of the movies that I had a big adoration to growing up. I enjoyed it, but there is a group of movies that I love, but I also just don't want to rewatch or I'm not interested in, and it not because of my big ass trauma bonds. There's other reasons that I haven't really been able to land on. And Casper is one of them. It's like, oh, I like it, but no, I don't really want to watch it. And you don't always need a reason for that. You know, sometimes it's just that way. However, I discovered why I like Casper, but would kind of like inch away from it if anyone was ever like, hey, you want to watch Casper? Or it was on TV or something. I couldn't engage with it. And it's sensory issues, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. Sensory issue overload. My God. I didn't know that that's what I was struggling with at the time. And I hadn't watched this movie in fucking hell. It came out in 95. I have no idea. Very long time. Very young me was clocking. There's sensory things in this movie that are bothering the absolute hell out of me, making me twitch out of my own skin and need to, I don't know, explode everywhere with it. That sounded weird, but that's how it came out. Anyways, so the clumps of dust make my skin crawl, and it's everywhere. There's layers of dust. I can feel it in my mouth. It's covering me now. If you don't have sensory issues, I don't know how to explain this to you any better. Besides, if I see the thing that bothers my sensory stuff, I now feel like it's static clung all over me and I can't get rid of it. And it's just not a feeling that I want to put myself into. Even by way of watching through a movie. That sentence didn't make sense, but... But then there's also the scenes... I know I'm coming out right off the bat with this, so if you haven't seen Casper, I'm sorry this isn't making sense, but... Or if you just don't remember it. You know. There's also the scenes with there's food being thrown and the uncle's eating and it just comes out their ghost asses in giant clumps of mush under their ghost asses on the floor underneath the kitchen table. They're vile. And again, this house, Casper's house, has so much fucking dust. I just don't. The second I was clocking that, I was like, oh, okay. Yep. Yeah. Now, I like the story. I think it's funny. But visually, it makes me want to claw my own skin off and run away because of my sensory issues. Anyways, I know I just went off about that. But now that I've addressed it, we can move on. Again, if you don't deal with stuff like that, apologies for my rant on it. Hope you don't mind. Also, if you skipped it, that's totally fine. Some people just don't want to listen to me drone on about that. And I understand. We're going to get into some movie facts. I'm going to give you not the extensive background on how Casper the Friendly Ghost came to be, but we're going to do a bit of a breakdown of it, all right? But we're going to have fun with it. I'm going to try to make this episode as fun as possible. There's probably going to be a few points when I'm describing, you know, when we get to the scenes with like the food, for example. I'm just not going to get heavily into it, which you don't need to anyway. So, okay, where to watch? Where did I watch this movie? You know, I initially watched this movie when I was trying to decide what to do after Practical Magic. I originally watched it on Peacock. And then when I went to watch it for my notes, bitch was gone. And I go, that happened in like a week? The fuck? So now it's on Netflix. Oh, now I'm second guessing that. I think it's on Netflix now. So that's where you can watch it if you would like to. I'm sure you can probably rent it other places, buy it if you want to. But the thing with this movie is, I mean, even without the sensory stuff, I like it. But I'm just not going to go out of my way to watch it. Which probably isn't the best thing to say at the beginning of this episode. It's fun. There are points where I'm like, well, this is a grand time. But it's kind of fleeting for me. Anyways, I promise we're still going to have fun here talking about this movie. I feel like I just kind of cut it off and ruined it by saying that now. I might cut it. I don't know. We'll see. Casper, 1995. What the fuck is it even about? Synopsis. Following the death of her father, Kerrigan Crittenden discovers she has only been left a Whipstaff Manor located in Friendship, Maine. Never been, but it looks cute. Kerrigan and her lawyer and also close friend, Dibbs, find a map within the will's papers alluding to an alleged treasure hidden inside Whipstaff. But they find that the manor is haunted as fuck by a friendly ghost named Casper and his three uncles, who wreak total havoc on anyone who tries to enter the home. James Harvey is a paranormal therapist. Yes, you heard that correctly. A paranormal therapist who helps ghosts move on. He and his daughter move to Whipstaff when Kerrigan tries to de-ghost the house to find the treasure hidden within the home. It was directed by Brad Silberling, written by Joseph Oriolo, Sherry Stoner, and Deanna Oliver. Malachi Pearson plays the voice of Casper McFadden. Devin Sawa portrays Casper in his human form. Christina Ricci, she plays Kathleen or Kat Harvey, James's daughter. Bill Pullman plays Dr. James Harvey. Kathy Moriarty plays Catherine Kerrigan Crittenden. Joe Nepote plays the voice of Stretch. He's the eldest asshole ghost in the uncle trio. Brad Garrett. I adore Brad Garrett. He plays the voice of Fatso, one of the ghosts. The uncle ghost, sorry. Joe Alasky, he plays the voice of Stinky, the third uncle ghost. Eric Idle plays Paul Dibbs Pultzker, Kerrigan's attorney slash friend, kind of. Amy Brenneman plays Amelia Harvey, James Harvey's deceased wife, Kat's mom. I don't know why I put Kat's mom there too in my note, because obviously, but anyways, here we are. And then Ben Stein plays Rug, Kerrigan's dead dad's lawyer. And I saw him, and of course, my first thought was, oh, it's the dry eye guy. I'll have to insert the clip because probably not everyone knows what I'm talking about. But if you saw those commercials, it's burned into your memory.
For dry, red eyes, clear eyes is awesome. It removes redness and has an ingredient to moisturize. Wow.
And then we also get some fun, and maybe not so fun, but we also get some fun cameos. So if you don't know all these people, that's totally okay. I'm giving kind of a brief explanation of who they are, but anyways. So Don Novello plays Father Guido Sarducci, who was called in by Kerrigan to de-ghost the house. So he was on Saturday Night Live as the character Father Guido Sarducci from 1978 to 1980, and then again from 1985 to 1986. So he's kind of iconic for that specific character, which I'll describe to you more when we get to that part. We get a quick clip of Dan Aykroyd, which is cool as shit because he comes in as a Ghostbuster. Ray Stantz. I was like, shit, we got 5 seconds with the Ghostbuster, and that was fun. We see Mr. Rogers. It's just archive footage, but, you know, I saw him listed as a under cameos and certain things I was reading, and I was like, it's Mr. Rogers, so I'm putting him in the cameo mentions. Terry Murphy, Clint Eastwood as himself. I'm not a fan of Clint Eastwood, but that's not a conversation for today. Rodney Dangerfield as himself. So if you don't know who that is, he is a comedian and he's known for movies like Caddyshack and Natural Born Killers. We get a pop in of Mel Gibson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's here for a moment. It's very quick, so we'll survive. And then the Crypt Keeper. as we go through, I'll explain those and then they'll make more sense, but I just wanted to list them now. Okay, history of Casper the Friendly Ghost. I did enjoy reading about his origin story. It was cute and it got me into wanting to read more comics randomly. I'm not really a comic book person. I'm not super in that world. I'm not knowledgeable in it, but I started to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole and I was really enjoying myself. So, maybe you got a new comic book fan out of me. I don't fucking know. I also just enjoy things that are vintage. I could see myself in the future collecting vintage comic books just because they're vintage. So... The original concept of Casper the Friendly Ghost was created by Joe Aurelio and Seymour Reet. Aurelio came up with the concept in the late 30s as a story he told to his children. It was to help them get over being scared in the dark. Aurelio was a young animator at Famous Studio. Famous, which had originally been Fleischer Studio, had just moved back to New York. Allegedly, Sam Buchwald, president of Famous, was upset that the story department had fallen behind and the studio needed a new story for a new short and they wanted it fast. And that's where Joe and Seymour came in and were like, we got something. Joe and Seymour had started working on the character. They had planned to sell it as a comic book or children's book. And that's when he brought on Seymour, his assistants, in putting a book together about Casper the Friendly Ghost. But of course, then they sold it to Famous Studios and, you know, took flight from there. Literally, Casper flies because he's a ghost. The original design featured Casper wearing a hat and sprouting a bit of a tail. They chose the name Casper based on the mild-mannered, unthreatening Casper. Oh, crap. I did not look up this name. Barfity barf barf. Probably one of those names where it's exactly how it sounds, but I literally have never seen this name before in my life. It looks like it's milk toast. I'm not kidding. Oh, the correct pronunciation. I'm reading this from Goog now, the Goog machine. The correct pronunciation of milk toast is milk toast. Oh my God. And that's in my note. I'm an idiot. Casper Milk Toast character created by cartoonist H.T. Webster. It almost looks like it could be milky toast. Milky, like you're saying milky, fancy. When Joe and Seymour heard the call for scripts from Famous Studios, they put together a script called The Friendly Ghost. Famous Studios liked it, and the story went into production. According to Joe, he and Seymour received $250 for the idea. I did see that the actual amount kind of varied as Joe told the story over the years, but I mean, anyways. According to Joe, the sale was for a one-shot production only. He had thought a cartoon based on the character might increase interest in the book. So I wasn't familiar with the term one-shot. What the fuck does that mean? Like, they shoot it all at one time? A one-shot in comics means a one-shot is a work composed of a single standalone issue or chapter, contrasting a limited series or ongoing series, which are composed of multiple issues or chapters. Up until he died, Joe stated that he had a contract indicating the character was only sold as a one-shot basis. However, Paramount, which Famous Studios eventually became Paramount or absorbed the company, something like that, had copyrighted the character in the film. Joe couldn't find lawyers willing to go up against Paramount. I mean, he maintained that he had been promised a contract guaranteeing a percentage of any licensing revenue, but he could never get the actual document. By the mid-50s, Harvey Comics had purchased property and films from Famous Studios, making legal action even more confusing. And Joe, he did die in 85, which I think I forgot to say. I feel like that's all a little bit confusing as far as contractually what was agreed upon, but it's all their word against his. But it just sucks because it seems like based off how that went down contractually, Joe and Seymour weren't able to do the book they wanted to because of, you know, the way their contracts were set up and the rights to the character. Let's just learn a little bit more about Casper and his adventures, you know, before the 1995 film.
There are some people who believe in ghosts, and there are some people who don't. If you're the believe-in-ghosts kind, then this story is about one. And if you're the don't-believe-in-ghosts kind, well, just for fun, this story is about one anyway. His name was Casper, and he was surely the most unusual ghost there ever was, or wasn't, depending on how you feel about it.
In his first short, The Friendly Ghost, Casper finds a cat and mouse battling. The cat, seeing Casper, throws himself against a wall, mouth wide open in fear. The mouse sees Casper and throws himself inside the cat's mouth and closes it. The mouse then runs into his hole, dragging the cat along. Critics of the character Casper thought the idea of a cartoon based on a dead little boy was in bad taste initially. The general public, though, found this kind of shapeless but hopeful character to be pleasant. I think they probably empathized with his gentle soul. I mean, Casper only wanted to make friends. He was a lonely dude, a lonely ghost. At the end of every short, he always succeeded and found a friend. A couple years after his debut, Casper returned in There's Good Booze Tonight in 1948. That was followed by A Haunting We Will Go in 1949. Directed by famous Disney animator Bill Tytlaw, he did Fantasia's Night on Bald Mountain. Saying that out loud feels wrong. It was written by Larry Bourne. It was almost sort of a remake of There's Good Booze Tonight. It opens with Casper attending school in a haunted schoolhouse where the ghosts are singing A Haunting We Will Go.
A haunting we will go, a haunting we will go. Ooh, ooh, ooh. A haunting we will go, a haunting we will go. A haunting we will go. Ooh, ooh, ooh. A haunting we will go.
In 1951, the series grew to 5 shorts. The titles that year were Boo Hoo Baby, To Boo or Not to Boo, Boo Scout, and Casper Comes to Clown, and Casper Bow Wow. In 1952 came Pigaboo. Casper scares a wolf skeleton right out of his body, so that's a little bit more of an iconic, famous shot.
Stop! You're hurting my friends!
The wolf then jumps on the skeleton and rides off. Another entry from 1952 was True Boo, where Casper plays Santa Claus for a poor boy on Christmas Eve. When the boy asks for toys, Casper begins making toys out of ordinary objects laying around the house. The mother sees Casper, grabs her son, and barricades themselves into the bedroom. But the crying boy helps the mom change her mind, and she asks Casper to come back. Clown tells the story of Casper and a bear cub he calls Brownie. Casper trains him to be a juggling bear and sings a pleasant song called Brownie is a Juggling Bear. Casper Bow Wow, that one started with Casper on trial in the Spookream Court. The sequence is done all in rhyme and ends with Casper being found guilty of friendship.
Casper is guilty, we all agree, of friendship in the first degree.
He's sentenced to life with humans. And then he goes out and makes friends with a dog. Casper, same. Okay, so I'm going to have to post a picture of this because it's terrifying and creepy and I love it. So in 1959, toy manufacturers and cereal producers were looking to animation to sell their product. So they're trying to partner up with, you know, cartoons. Mattel, developed a series called Maddie's Fun Day Funnies. The series featured animated Maddie, Mattel, and his sister, Sue Bell, promoting toys in between Harvey Tunes that consisted of Casper theatrical shorts, as well as Famous Boy Huey series, which was about a gigantic duckling also looking for friends. So him and Casper should have just been buddies, you know, BFFs for life. Herman and Catnip series and Little Audrey, about a cute little girl similar to Little Lulu. The Casper doll that was sold by Mattel is fucking terrifying. It doesn't look like a ghost. It just looks like a creepy child in a weird little fuzzy costume. These dolls also go for, well, what to me is expensive, between probably, I think, $130 and $200. You gotta just look at it. I will absolutely post a photo after this episode comes out, so you can check that out on social media or just give it a Google yourself, you know? Just Google Mattel Casper doll. It'll come up. Either way, it'll give you nightmares. Maybe not nightmares, but it'll burn itself into your brain a little bit. You'll be okay. The library of Casper the Friendly Ghost was kind of repackaged and debuted back on TV in 1963 as the New Casper Cartoon Show. The Saturday morning series featured new cartoons created by Harvey. 26 episodes were produced. So some of the new cartoons featured many popular Harvey comic characters, including Wendy the Good Little Witch, Spooky, the Tough Little Ghost, and the Ghostly Trio. So some titles from the cartoon series with Casper included Red Robin Hood, in which Casper helps a young king retain his throne. Another one was Little Lonesome Ghosts, which found Casper helping a lost ghost find his mother. Meh. Another was Professor's Problem. Casper proves there's a man in the moon. I thought it was a man on the moon. I thought that's how the saying went. But anyways, where he takes a scientist to the moon. Okay. The series ran on ABC from 63 to 69. About a decade later, Casper returned to Saturday mornings in a new series called Casper and the Angels. This was a Hanna-Barbera series that brought Casper into the distant future. The premise found Casper in the year 7179 AD, where he assisted two futuristic female law officers called the Angels in their fight against crime. Hanna-Barbera also brought Casper back into primetime TV the same year in Casper's Halloween, which came out in 1979, and Casper's First Christmas in 1979. So by 1989, most of the film rights were free, and a 25-year-old Jeffrey Montgomery acquired Harvey Publications, and therefore the rights to Casper. So that's where I'm going to kind of leave the history of Casper, Friendly Ghost. I'm going to give you just a couple of facts that I thought were cool from this film, the 1995 Casper. So it used a lot of CGI. For example, there's one 90-second scene with Casper and Christina Ricci's character Kat that took 8 months to create. There's this quote where the director, Brad Silberling, said there's more CG shots in the kitchen sequence of Casper than in Jurassic Park, which is true. So the manor in Whipstaff Manor in the movie was featured in the Backstreet Boys music video for Everybody. Rock your body, yeah. Everybody, yeah. Rock your body right. Backstreet's back, alright. So the look of Whipstaff Manor is heavily inspired by architectural work of Antoni Gaudi, or Gaudi. That's because the original director, Alex Proyas, ended up separating from the film for, you know, creative differences is what they said or what I read. But anyways, he didn't want the usual 19th century Victorian look of a haunted house. That concept definitely stayed on and carried over into the direction that the movie went. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, and Robin Williams were also considered for the role of Dr. Harvey, which Bill Pullman ended up landing. I'm pretty solid on Bill Pullman in this character. Out of that bunch, God, Robin Williams would have been lovely to see in this movie. I just think that there's something, Bill Pullman brings something to this character that just feels right. Bill Pullman said that he was really interested in this character and really wanted to take it because, quote, that was one I really remember looking forward to taking so I could bring my kids to the set. They were right at the perfect age to enjoy all the magic of it. I love that that was a motivation for him. So Harvey Comics, they really seem to take issue with the representations of ghosts in the film. A specific instance of this is when they claimed copyright infringement on the Ghostbusters logo. They claimed it looked a little too much like Fatso. They sued Columbia Pictures for $50 million and the destruction of all prints of the Ghostbusters, but the lawsuit was dismissed because the comic distributor hadn't renewed their copyright on Fatso. So, y'all, let's jump into this movie now. Casper, 1995.
Okay. One picture and we're history. That's what I'm afraid of.
Opens under a full moon, a howl, and a Whipstaff Manor. Two kids pull up on their bikes, getting to a stop at the gate. It's dark, it's ooky, super spooky. Kinda. Not so much to me, but it's there. And these kids are only there to prove to some dumb shits at school that they aren't cowards. Maybe on some sort of dare, it seems like. Either way, it's dumb kid shit. They head inside, spooked and ooked, trying to get out of there as fast as they can, but end up arguing over who's gonna take the photo and who's gonna be in it. They have a Polaroid camera. Boys, here's a thought. Take fucking turns?
Now wait a minute, I gotta be in the picture too or no one will believe I was here. Shut up and take the picture. You take the picture. You take it. You.
Anyways, it's dumb kid shit. Of course, that thought didn't come through their brain because, you know, when I was that age, probably wouldn't have thought of that either. And they're also scared out of their minds. They're so nervous to be there, which big same. I probably wouldn't have gone, to be honest. I would have gone during the day, maybe. I can't say what I would have done. But anyways, Casper comes to greet them. This is his usual thing. He likes to instantly greet people. A gracious host, you could say. But dust maybe a little bit, Casper, please. That would be even better.
Guys, guys,
Don't fight. I'll take the picture. Say cheese.
He offers to take their photo. So friendly, right? Casper is pretty cute. You know, I do like that. I could see myself watching the old cartoons more than watching this movie again. Please stick with me. We're still gonna have fun, I swear. Of course, he scares the hell out of them. The photo is fucking hilarious. They don't even end up taking it with them because Casper scares them so much. The Polaroid just, you know, flashes, pops out, and develops on the floor while they run off. Casper's big bummed. He gets so much rejection for being a ghost. Okay, but this opening scene is one of the parts where the score kind of sounds a bit holiday-ish to me. And it throws off the vibe. I'm not really feeling it. It doesn't happen the whole movie, but I specifically noticed it there and I just wanted to point it out. All right, we cut to the reading of a will by Mr. Dry Eye Guy, Ben Stein.
And to the Save the Dolphins Foundation, $11 million. To the Save the Pumas Foundation, $1.2 million. To the Patagonian Wasp Salvation Fund, $1.4 million. To the Dyslexic Dalmatians Foundation.
To hell with the livestock. What did the old stiff leave me?
He was reading the will of the recently departed father of Kerrigan. Y'all, she puts her fucking cigarette out on top of the table. Yeah, I'd snatch a finger for that, at least a nail. And honestly, this tells us everything we need to know about her, truly. Anyways, it turns out the only thing her dearest daddy, she treated her dad like shit, so that I say that with all the sarcasm, left her is Whipstaff Manor in Friendship, Maine. She's pissed. She wanted money. Ben Stein doesn't give a fuck.
Enjoy.
Wait a minute. This is not fair. I'll contest and then I'm gonna drag you and every one of those damn dolphins into court.
Knock yourself out.
Dibs. This is all your fault. As usual, if you would have just forged the damn will.
She ends up throwing the file with the deed in the fire pit in the office there after Ben Stein leaves the room. She's having a tantrum, essentially. Dibs is like, the fuck you doing? The deed is in there. We need that. He goes to try to get it out and catches a glimpse of something in the file alluding to a treasure hidden at Whipstaff. Of course, now Kerrigan is like, the fuck, Dibs, get it out of there. As if she's not the one who tossed it in there. I can't with Kerrigan. I want to drag her by her eye sockets and make her listen to reason, but I think she's too far gone. Anyways, off to Whipstaff they go. Kerrigan will continue to solidify herself as the absolute worst by treating Dibs like he is disposable and less than human. She calls Whipstaff a dump and Dibs says it's fabulous. I'm not a fan of this house. I want to be, but I'm not. Some aspects of it I think are really cool. Mostly, it reminds me of Floop's Castle in Spy Kids. It's Art Deco meets cartoon, and I love me some Art Deco. I don't know. It doesn't do it for me. They show up to Whipstaff, and naturally, being the gracious ghosty host he is, Casper tries to greet them.
Hello.
Huh? Who is it?
Who is it?
I'm afraid I can't answer that.
Why not?
It's kind of hard to explain.
Is he the caretaker?
Are you the caretaker?
No.
Is he a transient?
Are you a transient?
No, not exactly.
Well, then tell him to show himself.
Show yourself.
They're holding up a Zippo lighter like it's actually helping. It's not. I want to knock it out of their hands so bad. They scream after Casper asks them not to, and then the uncles come out. Kerrigan and Dibs bolt, and then they come back with the most not a priest ever. This is where we get Don Novello and his SNL priest character. It is pretty good. It is pretty fucking hilarious.
So tell me, you have experience?
I have quite a bit of experience. Not, you know, like exactly doing it, but I've studied it. And I talk to people who have done it, I've seen the videos, and I feel very confident that with my knowledge, I could do it, no problem.
Then you can handle this.
It's no problem. It's like no problem whatsoever. Piece of cake, piece of crumb cake.
Y'all, he's smoking. He's wearing a cross bigger than my head, as big as Flava Flav's clock necklace. And I think he's holding a lemon? Anyways, he comes back out with his head completely twisted around. Very Death Becomes Her. Maybe Exorcist, but I like Death Becomes Her more. And this is where we get to see Dan Aykroyd, Ghostbusters, just pops on by, can't get the job done, so he bolts.
Who are you going to call?
Someone else.
They end up trying to demolish the house, but before they can crush anything, the crew is run off by the uncles. We cut to Casper, and he's big sad. He's watching TV. Mr. Rogers. He flips from Mr. Rogers to an episode of Hard Copy.
More on the Pentagon Playboys as the story unfolds. But now, step aside, Sigmund Freud. Jump back, Joyce Brothers. It's Dr. James Harvey, therapist to the dead. Are you depressed? Are you anxious? Are you lonely? Do you need someone to talk to? No problem, if you're a ghost.
You can call them ghosts, if you like, or as I prefer, the living impaired. But the bottom line is, they need help sometimes. Just like the rest of us.
I don't know why this gives me a giggle so much, but it does. And we're introduced to Dr. James Harvey and his daughter, Kat. So Casper has a big old fucking crush on Kat instantly. Casper, you're a ghost. You're a ghost. It's not gonna happen. Anyways, he doesn't care. He decides he's gotta get Kerrigan to hire Dr. Harvey to come out to Whipstaff Manor. So he ghosty jumps a power line to Kerrigan's hotel and zaps himself into the TV in her hotel room. It works. She sees the special and hires Dr. Harvey.
That's life. That's life. That's what all the people say. Riding high in April. Sat down in.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry about your cactus spooners.
Spooners.
Now, I don't care what they said. You are not demented. You're a picture of mental health.
They were talking about you. I mean, try explaining afterlife therapy to what junior high kids.
Y'all, Kat is not having it. She's sick of fucking moving. She's a teenager. She's what, 13 or 14 or something like that? She's tired of moving around. She's exhausted. She never can keep friends. She's still mourning the death of her mom. And her dad is hell bent on this whole paranormal therapist thing because he's also trying to find the ghost of her mom. And he's convinced that she has unfinished business and he's gonna find her. So they're talking about this. Like I said, she's big mad about this and moving again. She's so fucking over it. And she says this to her dad. He tells her, you sound like your mom. He's kind of being playful. And then she says to him, he isn't going to find her, meaning her mom, that there's no such thing as ghosts. So this is where he slams on the brakes and pulls over and they come to a little agreement here.
I'll tell you what. You go with me this one last time. If I don't find what I'm looking for, then it's over. No more moving, no more ghost mining.
You promise?
Promise.
Deal.
Deal.
They pinky swear on it and off they go to Friendship, Maine. I just need to note, he has his fucking chaise lounge and his doctor chair strapped to the top of this station wagon that's so weighed down with shit. I don't understand how they're driving this across country because they're coming from Los Angeles and they're popping over to Maine in this bitch. It's absurd. I'm also convinced that Dr. Harvey is full of ADHD. There's just Easter eggs alluding to it here and there. For example, in this scene where they pinky swear, then they get back on the road, he was heading very much in the wrong direction. Oh, they were coming from Arizona. I think I said Los Angeles. They were coming from Arizona and he started driving towards Los Angeles. You see a road sign and that he ends up slamming his brakes again and doing a U-turn. He wasn't even remotely going in the accurate direction. There's other things that make me feel like this character has ADHD, but you know, anyways, they arrive at Whipstaff. Kerrigan and Dibbs meet them there. They're weird as hell with Kat. I don't like it. They're sizing her up as if they're getting ready to kidnap and sell her. Okay, that was really, I'm sorry, that was dark as hell. But that's really what it feels like here.
You have a beautiful daughter, Dr. Harvey.
Very beautiful.
I can't tell you how happy we are that you could come all the way to Whipstaff.
Very happy.
The both of us.
You're kind of hurting my face.
Sorry.
They're in her face. Kerrigan grabs hold of her by the chin and they're complimenting her at the same time. But they're so aggressive with the yanking of her head back and forth because Kerrigan's got her fucking hand claw up in Kat's chin, gripping it, sizing her up. And Dibbs is yanking Kerrigan's wrist back and forth. And they're just basically yanking her head back and forth. I don't know if I said that in a way that it makes sense, hopefully. Anyways, now Kerrigan is all over Harvey. There's no personal fucking space. And no one's saying anything about it. If a stranger walked up to my child and did that, I would have slapped the fuck out of their hands. Again, Kerrigan would have lost another finger. Bitch, that's two. So far in my world, she's lost two fucking fingers. Kerrigan's all over Harvey and she demands he get the job done fast. They give him a check, a large ass vase of flowers, and then they leave him to it. They head in and Casper is stoked. He's so nervous he doesn't rush to greet them like he usually does. Meanwhile, Kat gets the electricity turned on. At first, you kind of think that it's Dr. Harvey who is working this breaker box, but it's Kat, and it's pretty great. And he's just kind of like, oh, yeah, perfect. It's all, yep, we did it. Not taking credit for it, but also still trying to kind of act like he could have. It's okay to admit that you don't know how to work a breaker box. It doesn't make you less of a man. It's fine. Kat gets the electricity turned on and then she heads off to find a room. And Casper is kind of following her around, incognito-ish. She tries a door and finds three beds labeled
Stretch, Fatso, and Stinky. Man, they had cool parents. Wonder where Doc and Dopey sleep.
She eventually decides on a room off the main hallway. It's up a couple of short steps and it has its own little hallway. The dust is fucking everywhere and it's killing me. Sorry, I'm bringing it back to the sensory issues for just a moment because Also, Bill Pullman as Harvey is the Bill Pullman I love. He's kind of aloof, but he doesn't know it. Clearly some sort of neurodivergent. He's got this mellow, dorky dadness that I find very attractive. He's trying so hard to be a good dad, but he also isn't processing his grief over the passing of his wife. And it does affect his ability to dad. But he loves Kat so much. He just needs some guidance. I think he needs his own grief counseling, to be honest. Anyways, the room that Kat chooses is Casper's room. And we get the... Okay. She calls out, found my room, and he comes in with some boxes and he kind of starts to help her unpack a little bit. And she's like, nah, dad, I got it. And they kind of have a cute interaction. And then he goes to leave her to it. And at the end of that little hallway that leads to her room off the main hallway, you see him kind of trip and kind of slide on his heels down these couple of stairs. I guess that wasn't actually supposed to happen. He just actually tripped. It was an accidental trip. It wasn't written into the script like that, but he played it off so well that they kept it in. And I loved reading about that because that little scene is one of the parts where I find Bill Pullman's in general, but his character is so, I don't know. I want to use the word endearing, but I know I use it all the time. And I'm like, is that getting annoying? I don't know. It's one of my favorite words, but I guess that's the best way I have to describe it right now. It's very endearing. And I'm just like, I like him. He's adorable. And he plays it off so well. It's fucking hilarious. Kat is getting herself set up in Casper's room. Casper is big stoked. There's a girl in his room.
There's a girl on my bed. Yes.
She rolls out a sleeping bag on the bed, thank God, because I don't think I could have handled her laying on that dust trap of a blanket. Casper makes himself into a pillow. Casper is supposed to be cold as fuck. You'll see in later scenes when she actually touches him, kind of, his spectral self. He's very cold and icy, and she even says that. But when she lays on his Casper pillow, he's not? It confuses me, and it throws me, and I just... Anyways. Apparently, it's fine, because Kat doesn't seem bothered by his Casper pillow temp at all. Anyways, she gets back up, and she dumps out a bag of clothes on the floor, and she's kind of sniffing them to see if they're clean. I hate this, too. She's sniffs a pair of rolled up socks and throws them behind her. As she's doing this, Casper is trying to work up what to say to her. He wants to talk to her. He's going to introduce himself. He's so nervous. So he's starting to kind of come up behind her and the roll of socks lands in his mouth and he kind of reflexively spits them back out and it connects with the back of her head. And now she's like, what the fuck was that? So she turns around, sees Casper and passes the fuck out. Casper, he goes into the bathroom. There's a bathroom connected to this room. This room is cool as shit. But anyways, the sink is so whole, it's so rusted and gross and filthy and grimy. And he fills it with water and just fully submerges himself in this sink. Also, the water ran brown first and he kind of bangs on the pipe to get it to run clear. I hate it. Hate it so much. And then he squeegees himself over her face to get her to wake up. I hate this too. I hate this scene. My skin is crawling with death from it. Anyways, she wakes up and just screams.
Honey, what?
Dad, I saw a ghost. It was a real ghost. It was real. Slow down.
What are you saying?
I saw a ghost.
I feel like there were so many other things he could have done. Like, you know, a cold ass breeze would have done fine to wake her up. Maybe call for her dad. I guess it's adolescent ghost logic. Anyways, she screams in his face. Same. Y'all, the way... the way Harvey yells, honey! I can't... It's so funny. He comes running, honey! I can't... She's telling him she saw a ghost. He's trying to calm her down and he starts checking the room for ghosts, right? He finds Casper in the closet.
No, there's no ghost in there. We can even check from here. There. See?
Pleasure to meet you, sir.
Harvey grabs Kat, throws her over her shoulder, and now they're just running down the hallway. And she's like, Dad, I can walk. They end up in a hall closet. Harvey's losing it a bit. He tells Kat to stay put and he's going to go investigate. Meanwhile, Casper feels like he blew it and he's beating himself up over it when he hears the uncles arrive home. This is why the house has been quiet for so long and they've been able to attempt to settle in, choose a room, unpack, because the ghosts, uncle ghosts, were out to the races. Literally, they went to a spectral horse race, I believe.
Man, oh man, them ponies run faster when we go down to Belmont.
Here, Flicka.
Hey, guys!
Oh, look, it's Casper! You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being fun and 1 being you. Yeah, we had fun. Up there. Say, Bulbhead, why ain't you inside doing your chores?
Yeah, where's dinner? I'm starving. Look at me. I'm wasting away.
Casper's trying to keep them out. It doesn't work. And now Harvey is about to meet the three spectral stooges.
We're in the room now. In the room. Can you deal with that?
Dive!
He passes out and they swan dive into his passed out gaping mouth. When he rouses, he goes to the rusty, dusty sink. He was in Kat's room when he passed out. So he goes into the bathroom to splash some water on his face. And when he looks in the fucking mirror, he doesn't see himself. He sees Clint fucking Eastwood.
I'm gonna kill you, your mama, and all her bridge playing friends.
And then Rodney Dangerfield.
You think you got it tough? I got a facelift. There was one just like it underneath.
And then Mel fucking Gibson. And last but not least, he sees the Crypt Keeper. Okay, so there was supposed to be a fourth person he was supposed to see himself transform into in this mirror, that being Steven Spielberg, which I forgot to say is a producer, director, blah, 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 on this film. That sequence was filmed. They needed to cut some things. And Spielberg, he wasn't confident in himself acting in this, even though it's a quick thing. He just wasn't confident in himself as an actor and he was the weakest link, so they ended up cutting him from the scene. I think that the four and ending with the Crypt Keeper works fucking perfect. I think Spielberg would have been too much. Chaos ensues. The uncles are giving him hell. Stinky gives him a fucking halitosis smellogram.
Smellogram!
They end up sword fighting with umbrellas. Harvey has a plunger. Eventually, Harvey gets a hold of a vacuum and sucks them inside, temporarily trapping them. He's so proud of himself. I love it. Okay, so the next morning, Casper tries to make Kat breakfast before the uncles rise and shine for the fucking day. The initial shock has kind of worn off a bit, and she's asking him some questions about his ghosty life. Ah, the food scenes. I hate the food scenes. Again, my sensory issues cannot take all the goop and chewing and things being flung. For example, Casper uses his ghosty palm to strain the pulp out of some freshly squeezed orange juice, and then he just tosses it all over the wall behind him. I hate it. I hate it. It's the sounds. It's the way it looks. Add in the clumps and webs of dust, and my body is one giant raw nerve with it all. Anyways, Harvey shows up for breakfast. He's also freaked out, but he takes a seat next to Kat and asks if she's okay. They seem to be kind of trying to acclimate to a ghost making them breakfast. Casper serves them stacks of pancakes, and then the fucking uncles blow in.
I love the smell of fleshies in the morning.
I hate the way they eat. They won't let Casper clean up. They admonish him for trying to be tidy. Casper's like, we have guests. And they're like, we don't give a fuck. They are tyrant spectral assholes, okay? Kat gets defensive towards Casper, and I love it.
You guys are disgusting, obnoxious creeps.
Thank you.
I mean, what's your problem? You're just cleaning the floor.
Hey, shut up, skin bag.
Piss off.
Take a hike.
Get a grade.
Honey, school thing. Are you late?
Dropped it.
Too late.
She calls them out for treating Casper like Ghostrella. Harvey ushers her out, trying to just calm down the situation, and she heads off to school, and he begins to attempt to therapize the uncles. We meet Kat's teacher and fucking Amber, who is volunteering to have the Halloween party that they're talking about at her parents' house because the school can't host it anymore due to asbestos. Problem of the 90s, am I right? Then Kat is introduced to the class. Amber's being a bitch. She's a tiny Kerrigan in the making, truly. Casper is tying everyone's shoelaces together as this is happening. Most everyone's, I think. I don't know if he does all the kids. And the kids are in awe over Kat living at Whipstaff, and one of them suggests having the Halloween dance there. Amber gets all kid bitchy. She's pissed about it, and then she's like, let's put it to a vote. Anyways, Whipstaff wins. Amber has a little fit, and everyone eats shit when the bell rings and they stand up to try to leave. Fucking Casper. Back at the house, Harvey is unpacking his office stuff, still trying to therapize the uncles a bit, who obviously are not fucking having it. They see a photo of his wife, Amelia, his late wife, and they're like, oh, we've seen her. Harvey asks if they can contact her. They make a deal with him. They're like, if you can keep Kerrigan off our backs, we'll bring her to you. Fatso Waddle floats off. Harvey is alight with thinking he's gonna get to see the love of his life again. He's been trying to do this ever since she passed away. The whole reason why he became a paranormal freaking therapist. But it turns out they were fucking with him. Guys, I really don't like this. It just breaks my heart. And Bill Pullman, he really does do a grand job here of making you feel that character's grief. It's so devastating and it's cruel. Anyways, Casper is trying to convince Kat to take him as her date to the Halloween dance. He takes her unwillingly for a nighttime ghost flight to check out the top of a lighthouse and the view from it. She doesn't want to go. She's telling him no. He has her by her fucking ankle. She's upside down yelling no. And Casper's like, I really want to take you here, so I'm going to do it anyway. And basically kidnaps her. Okay, guys, don't do this. Okay, she said no. Now means no. Don't make me have that fucking conversation. All of you spectral guys out there, if you have a lighthouse you like to frequent in your ghosty life and you want to share that with someone, get in the car, take a walk, lead them by foot instead of taking them unwillingly without permission and suspending them by the ankle and flying them over the ocean at night. Traps my ass, obviously. All right, on top of the lighthouse, she isn't even mad about this anymore. She's like, oh, this is beautiful, Casper. No, be mad. Be mad. Because he thinks he can get away with it. I'm getting too into this, I know. Anyways, I mean, I guess she needs him to get down. But guys, dead or not, when someone says no, you don't suspend them by the ankle and then take flight with them just because you wanna. We learn Casper doesn't remember shit about his human life. We hear the line, a sort of famous line, I guess, can I keep you? And I hate it. I know it's supposed to be cute and like a pickup line, but I have a hard time not interpreting it literally, and therefore I don't like it. I get it. He's a lonely ghost with shit tyrant ghost uncles who died young, and he doesn't know why. But she isn't a fucking pet, my dude. She can't just be your abandoned manor live-in girlfriend, okay? It's the day of the dance, and Kat is on the hunt for something to wear when she finds what seems to be an old playroom. Meanwhile, Kerrigan and Dibs are spying on Harvey, peeking through a window, and the uncles. Harvey is in a big sad mood after their fucking joke that they played on him, fuckers. So the uncles decide they're going to take him to happy hour at the local dive bar, and Kerrigan and Dibs take the opportunity to explore the house while the uncles are out. Kat cleans and sets up this playroom for Casper, hoping it will jog his memory. Casper is thrilled, and it works. He starts to remember. This room is really fucking cool, y'all. I'll definitely post a clip of this scene, because when she gets it all set up, it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's fun. I really enjoy it. So Casper is starting to remember, and he zooms to another room where he ghost jumps into an old trunk and pulls out this beautiful old lace dress. That was his mom's, and he is like, Kat, put this on. This could be your costume. Dust and all. Then Casper finds a snow sled, which unlocks more of his memories, and we learn how he died.
I begged and begged my dad to get me this sled. And he acted like I couldn't even have it, because I didn't know how to ride it. And then one morning, I came down for breakfast, and there it was, just for me, for no reason at all. I took it out, went sledding all day, and my dad said that's enough, but I couldn't stop. I was having so much fun. Got late. Got dark. Got cold. And I got sick. My dad got sad.
So basically he got pneumonia and died, which is horrible, super fucking tragic. Kat asks him what it's like to die. This answer, what even is this? He says, it's like being born, but backwards. And then he says he stayed behind so his dad wouldn't be lonely. Meh. Kat sees a bunch of old newspapers from after Casper died with headlines like, weird shit happening at the manor after boy's tragic death, and father builds resurrection machine. Okay, those weren't the literal titles of the articles, but you know, you get the picture. Casper remembers where the Lazarus is, this resurrection machine. He's like, oh yeah, that exists. And he takes Kat there by way of the Up and Atom machine. The Up and Atom machine reminds me of the Haunted Mansion ride a bit. It definitely feels like a Disney ride either way. But yet again, my sensory issues can't take this fucking shit. Initially, this thing is cool because we're in what's kind of like the library, but Harvey's also been using it as an office. But it's one of those, it's this big open room, but it has this sort of like loft second level with a spiral staircase up to it where it's just like lined with walls of books and such. And the office chair that's up there, it's one of those, you know, like spinny chairs, but it looks like an armchair, is on a track. And this track leads down this spiral staircase, which when put into action, the stairs go flat. So you can just slide down it. And then a hole opens up in the floor at the bottom of these stairs. And you just go flying down into this fucking ride. If they made this into a ride, I would 100% do it, even though I'm not a fan of anything that makes me feel like my heart is gonna drop out of my fucking asshole. But anyways, once you get down into like the cave of this thing, it starts to remind me of Back to the Future and Doc and his gizmos and gadgets that help him make breakfast in the morning and shave. There's a bunch of alarm clocks. And as you're going through on this chair, you see powder being smashed onto her face. There's a toothbrush. There's a toothbrush with the nastiest cloudy looking toothpaste. I hate it. And listen, if that thing was coming at me, I would just beg for my body to dissolve into this chair because I can't. Also, how old is that toothbrush? How old is it? I can't. is so... I need to move on. At the end of the Up and Atom Machine, it lands in this cave, which it's cool down there. Almost reminds me of the Goonies a bit. And this is where the Lazarus Machine is. My mind just went in so many places because of that fucking toothbrush. Where am I in my notes? Okay, we can't forget that Kerrigan and Dibbs were in the house while this is happening. So they were spying on them as they're hitching a ride on the Up and Atom Machine. So Kerrigan and Dibbs, this is actually where we get a little bit of a faux pas, because there's only one chair on the Up and Atom Machine ride. And it was in, they didn't send it back up because obviously they need to get the fuck out of there. Once they get down there, you see Kerrigan and Dibbs hop a ride on the Up and Atom Machine in the same chair, even though that chair is still in the cave part at the end of this thing. I'm not saying this in a way that makes total sense, but I hope you get what I'm trying to say. So anyways, that's just a little faux pas of the film itself. Okay, so Casper and Kat, they start fucking with the Lazarus while Kerrigan and Dibbs are creeping around, and they find a vault where they think the treasure must be. So we learn that there is enough Lazarus juice. It's kind of like, it's in this really cool gold glass bottle, and there's like this red liquid in it, and it basically, you need it to get the Lazarus to work. Again, it's very Doc throwing banana peels into the time machine car. I forget what he calls it, but anyways.
What is this?
Carol! That's what makes the whole thing work. Kind of an instant primordial soup mix. It's what brings Ghost back to life. Just enough for one.
There's only enough of this Lazarus juice shit to bring one person back to life. And Casper wants to do it. He's like, fuck yeah, let's Lazarus myself. But Kerrigan snatches the Lazarus juice as Casper is in it, and it's turning its fucking gears about to bring him back. She snatches it, takes off with it. They don't see her do this, so they don't know what the fuck happened. We learn that Kerrigan's plan is to kill Dibbs, have him get into the vault by way of his ghosty spectral self, and then bring him back to life with the Lazarus. Dibbs is not super chill with this plan, and dude, same. I don't want to take that risk. Fuck whatever's in there. I'm not dying for it and hoping to be brought back to life with this machine that we just... There's no guarantee. You haven't seen it fully in action. You don't know that it's gonna work. Dibbs isn't chill with this plan, so a fight to the death ensues, and Kerrigan ends up falling off a cliff to her death.
Kerrigan! What a tragic waste. She had my favorite sunglasses.
Not so fast, little man. The bitch is back.
Twist of fate, I suppose. All right, meanwhile, at happy hour, Harvey's getting downed to some karaoke.
Warden threw a party at the county jail. The prison band was there, they began to wail. Man was wailing, all the soul began to swing. You should have heard this knocked out jailbird sing a last rock.
This Dr. Harvey's got a lot of spirit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he's got his whole miserable life ahead of him.
So we could do him a favor, put him out of his misery.
Fucking hate karaoke. When the unks decide dead is best for him. That is until Harvey drunk professes his love for the uncles and says he's gonna tell Kerrigan to fuck off. It's their house to haunt. And ends up giving him each a big old smooch on their ghosty lips. Then he proceeds to fall down a manhole that's directly right outside the door to the bar to his death. So now he's dead. Back in the Lazarus cave, Kerrigan gets her treasure. There's actually a little treasure chest in there. We don't know what's in it yet. And wants to be brought back to life, which she needs Dibbs' help for, since she needs someone to operate the machine while she's inside of it. But Casper and Kat, they get the Lazarus juice and ditch the cave. And then the doorbell rings. Because don't forget, it's time for a Halloween dance at Whipstaff Manor.
Oy, perfect.
We're here.
Okay. Hi. Come on in. This is the room. Stay together. You'll be safe, and I'll be right back.
Casper and Kat, they head back to the cave. Kerrigan is being a demanding bitch.
Hey, Poppin' Fresh, it's my turn in the oven. Dibbs, get this thing cooking, you flaccid little worm, you!
Y'all, Dibs is over it. He's so over it.
If there's one thing I've learned from you, it's always kick them when they're down. And baby, you're 6 feet under. Oh, what a shame.
He says all this shit, and she ends up punching, Kerrigan ends up punching him through a window. And then Kerrigan crosses over because, according to her, she has no unfinished business. Casper and Kat are about to bring Casper back to life when the uncles and dead Dr. Harvey show up. Y'all, Kat is devastated. She's crying. She's a bit distraught here. At first, Harvey doesn't know who she is. He's instantly lost his memory, and he's just having a grand old time with the uncles. And they're like, yeah, fuck yeah, he's loving dead life. But she helps him remember as she's losing it, just tears rolling down her kid face. And Casper decides that it's more important for Dr. Harvey to be brought back to life instead of himself. And that's what he does. Dr. Harvey is no longer a ghost daddy. Meanwhile, the party has started upstairs. Casper is sulking in his toy room because he knew that that was the right choice, but it's still devastating for him because for a moment there, he was like, oh my God, I'm going to get to live again after all this time of being lonely, a lonely ghost. And this is when Angel Cat's mom shows up.
That was a very noble thing you did tonight, Casper. I know Kat will never forget it. She needs her father. And I know yours will never forget it either. You fulfilled his greatest dream, Casper. And I know he is very, very proud of you. And for what you've done, I'm giving you your dream in return. But it's just for tonight. Sort of a Cinderella deal.
So I have until midnight?
10.
Hey, Cinderella got until midnight.
Cinderella wasn't 12 years old.
I think her showing up, that's my favorite part. It's a Ghostrella deal for sure. Casper's big happy. He goes downstairs to the dance and he gets to slow dance with Kat as a human.
Such a gentleman. If you lose your way, think back on yesterday. Remember me this way. Remember me this way.
I told you I was a good dancer.
Can I keep you? Casper?
This part's cute, but guys, he's 12. And I just don't remember being entranced by it like everyone else. We get that line again, can I keep you? I don't even remember being enthralled by this when I was a kid. I didn't like it. Again, I was probably interpreting it literally and was like, no, you can't keep nothing, bitch. This scene is just mostly sad as hell to me because he's still dead and there's still a clock running on how long he has to be human. So time runs out. While this is happening and he's at the dance with Kat, Angel Kat's mom, Amelia, appears to Dr. Harvey.
Hello, James. It's all right. It's just me.
I thought I'd have 100 things to say when I... How?
Let's just say you know three crazy ghosts who kept their word.
I love this scene, especially when she is like, and don't make her wear a shirt underneath her bathing suit. And she's like, I'm good. I don't have unfinished business. You need to move on too, James. It's horribly sad, but this was the resolution he needed to know that she's okay, but also that him and Kat are going to be okay. Yeah, it's just kind of a great scene. Anyways, the clock strikes 10 and time is up. Casper kisses Kat as he turns back into a ghost.
Boo?
Every Everyone loses their shit, but the party must go on. At least for the ghosts and the earthly inhabitants of Whipstaff Manor. Because this is the end of the movie.
It ain't over yet. Boys!
Casper, the friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost you know. No grown up might look at anyone fight. The children are there before.
The end. Hey yo, Casper, the friendliest ghost. Overall, it's a cute movie. Not my favorite, but it's a cute movie. There's some parts that I really, really like. Again, like Kat's mom coming back, showing up for a moment. I enjoy Bill Pullman in this movie a lot. When I think of Bill Pullman, this is the character I think of. So there's that. Don't forget to give the show a little like and a follow so you can get a notification when my next episode is available. I adore you. Okay, bye.
It's my party and I'll die if I want to. Die if I want to.